What's going on, everybody? Welcome to our downtown studios. This is Five Rounds today. I'm your host, John Ramdean, alongside my good friend, Mr. Robin Black. And before we went live here, we're talking about just what a crazy schedule we have. The UFC has, mixed martial arts has. I know a lot of people out there, isn't the UFC mixed martial arts? For the most part,
it is. These days, to a lot of people, it is.
But coming up on Friday, Bellator has a big show. It was supposed to have Michael Chandler and Josh Thompson. Aaron Pico, this phenom that Bellator signed, knocked out Josh Thompson. He's out of the card. It was supposed to be Haritanov making his Bellator debut. He got the shits. I'm not even supposed to swear, but he did. He got sick.
He got it.
He's pulled from the card. Anderson Silva pulled from the card for UFC 198, which goes down this weekend. But because we're so focused on the preview shows that we have, we have a preview show that we're set to shoot tomorrow about UFC 198. A lot of people believe it's one of the biggest cards, if not the biggest card ever. You just did an amazing breakdown. And again, for all of our viewers out there, whether you're in Canada or watching around the world, if you like understanding fights and you want to get a better appreciation of mixed martial arts and what these fighters are their mindset, tune into this breakdown. Stipe Miocic, Fabrizio Werdum, awesome insight. Do you think it's one of your best?
I think my very best breakdown I've ever done is John Jones versus Cormier, which is in the bank.
They have it.
The UFC has it. It's by far the best work I've ever done. And that's in July.
In July. Yeah.
So maybe a week or two before that, it'll come out as long as – because I had it done for the last meeting. So I think that's the best work I've ever
done. And I like that you said, is that in July? Because, again, it's very difficult to really grasp what's coming down the pipe. Because, like we said, this weekend, UFC 198. And then this weekend's the 14th. And then the 29th is UFC Fight Night, Almeida Garbrandt. And then June 4th, Rockhold Weidman 2. And then June 18th, we go to Ottawa to see Rory McDonald and Stephen Thompson.
Wow.
And then we have a couple of weeks off.
That's insane.
And then we're not sure, but we're hoping that we make the trek to Sin City, to Las Vegas, to cover International Fight Week. Eddie Alvarez, Rafael Dos Anjos. If you're in Canada, live here on Fight Network. The biggest fight, arguably, that we've ever had. I know some people would say it's Anderson Silva, Michael Bisping. But the lightweight championship of the world is on the line here. Two top guys, and we've had the great fortune of showcasing Eddie Alvarez's career. You know, whether it was in Bodog or in Dream, we got people excited about Eddie Alvarez. We had a feeling eventually he would make his way to the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And if he did, he'd be finding himself fighting for the UFC title, which is happening against one of the most underrated guys at 155 pounds in RDA.
Yeah. I mean, I think Eddie Alvarez is underrated, underappreciated by UFC consumers if they didn't see him before. Because it's like, well, he comes up and against Cowboy, he did pretty good. Cowboy destroyed him physically to the body in ways that most guys are gone. It's over. The fight's over, you know. I think he won the first round and then round two. I mean, there were some shots and knees to the sternum that would kill people. You know, and I thought that fight he really toughed out a hard loss and looked very good. And then Gilbert, you know,
the eye,
and then he beats Pettis.
Yeah,
you know what
Crazy.
I mean. Now people, depending on how you view fighting, you look at you know, he just wrestled him, he held him, whatever. Those were very intelligent, smart, well executed fights. If you haven't seen his insane fights before that, and all you have is those three, you may not yet appreciate Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, just do yourself a favor. Go watch the first Michael Chandler fight. It went down on the same night or the same weekend that Dan Henderson and Shogun had their epic war. And, you know, you watch it, you're just not sure what you're seeing.
Yeah, the chaos and his comfort in it, you know. And lately, so around that time, Eddie Alvarez, I created a scale about risk taking and how much damage you were capable of sustaining in battle.
The SAP Alvarez scale.
Named it after Eddie Alvarez. And since that time, I don't know, and I use quotes from him himself about giving it and taking it and being able to go in there into the fire and take it. And that's how he lived. Somewhere after that time, he was like, I'm not Tank Abbott. You know, it's like somewhere something changed in his view. It's like, wait a second, is this how I fight? I don't know if he saw the scale, or I don't know if this has any connection whatsoever. But around that time, he realized, hey, I do want to win every fight I'm in, and I want to protect myself. And his fight, he fights a little different. I still love him.
Yeah, I mean, what's not to love? Again, you look at his history. You look at the fact that he's evolving as a martial artist. So, yeah, this is what brought me to the big show.
That's right.
Now I have to evolve, and the landscape is the talent is deeper. Again, like you can argue that because Michael Chandler, he's a hellion.
Amazing, yeah.
But the fact is, now that he is in at the place that he's always wanted to be, in a position to fight for the most prestigious championship in the sport of mixed martial arts, sometimes you got to fight conservatively. Mm-hmm. You got to think about the victory. You got to think about self-preservation. And on top of that, we know, based on information we've gotten, that head trauma is very real in the sport of mixed martial arts. And I don't know if he was thinking about that when he was in Bodog
Probably
or
he
was in Dream.
Probably wasn't. Most of them weren't. Yeah. Most guys weren't. Football was the same, But that fighting smart and fighting for self-preservation to win and preserve yourself – he did it in his last couple of fights. Not all that different than George St. Pierre did it. Close the distance, wrestle a guy, take away all space. Because, man, do you really want Anthony Pettis punching and kicking you in space?
No.
So the two options is the one that John Jones used against OSP. Because people are like, oh, his performance was underwhelming. His performance was self-preservation oriented, among other reasons. Actually, it was a great performance. It was a brilliantly performed fight. But among other reasons, it's like there's more on the line than just – if you fought OSP 3 years ago or you fought OSP coming off, a different win or whatever. But this one's like, I want my belt and I want Daniel Cormier and I want it in
That's
a big
fight.
I want it in New York or I want it at UFC 200. It's big, money, power, reacquiring something that defines you. All of those things were carried into the OSP fight. Oh, man, I just got to win this thing. Win this thing. And to
but
win
it wasn't
thing,
like,
stay at distance.
True. But at the same time, he could have done that and only do that. But he was taking risks.
Yeah.
He was doing a lot of crazy things trying to take out OSP. It's like, I'm going to try these things, but if I can't, the guy's a tough guy. He fights in the UFC.
Yep.
If he doesn't fall when I throw a flying this or a spinning elbow or whatever, he doesn't go down, I'm just going to my default and try to wear this guy out over the course of 25 minutes. And along those 25 minutes, I'm still going to try to take him out.
For sure.
But not at the risk, not of going over, not crossing that line where he could take advantage and get a win.
I know one thing that gets debated about when talking about a guy that you really like, guy that you find really exciting, depending on how you define that, and some of you don't, the desire to finish. Oh, man, this guy goes out to finish every fight. I know this sounds like it's not right, but
everybody
fighter is always trying to finish every fight.
Why would you want to be in there any longer than you have
to? What they mean is recklessly trying to finish a fight? No, not every fighter is doing that. But every fighter is trying to set up a scenario in which you can get the cleanest, brutalest thing going or you get a guy's neck.
Yeah.
But to do that from wherever, there's a lot of threats I'm processing here. And I want to figure out how to either disarm them or make the weapons fire off in other ways where I can work around them and finish you. But finishing you isn't just like, well, I will go finish you. That's an end result. That's
but we have been taught
process.
That, though.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem with history. And you and I were talking because today we had the chance to call a Pancrase show. And back in the day, it was such a small pool of talent. There was no money involved. So the people that got into this game were nuts.
Totally.
And the people that started consuming this stuff, like you, like me, saw these athletes as superheroes, reckless, crazy.
Yeah. Somewhere.
Because they were putting on shows that you couldn't see this anywhere else. Now, the more money that started getting involved, where friends would tell friends, oh, you got to watch this. Well, I'm not really a sports guy. Well, watch it and it's going to change your opinion. Oh, my God, this is for me.
Yeah.
And the community started growing and sponsors started getting involved and more money started getting involved. Other people were, whoa, you can make money at this stuff? I was going to be a junior wrestling coach and now I can make $100,000? Get me out, but I got to get punched in the face. All right, I'm just going to take the guy down.
Exactly.
So yeah. then this the game starts unfolding, and then mixed martial arts is where we are today.
Yeah, and some of that is the athletes who were not fighters. They were a combat athlete, but there was didn't have that nature of just stand there and drill other guys like Eddie Alvarez used to have, and now prefers not to because he's smart. And back then he was of an era that's how guys fought. And
from
he
Philly.
Realized, and when he used to say, "I can give it and I can take it just as well or better than the next guy," he could, and he proved that. But then later you realize, oh, that's not the only. That's what dumb people do. Oh, I'm not a dumb guy. And then he evolved his game. But I think there's also an element, from what I understand about the history of other sports, the thing that improves is defense. It's like hockey games that were once 10-8 now are 2-1. Soccer games that were 5-2 are now 1-0. That defense goes up. The ability to stop something is something that is easier to develop or develops at a higher level. Logically, it is. I see what that is. Well, we got to figure out how to stop it. And a whole bunch of our energy as evolving a sport or evolving an art comes about trying to stop that. And that's why sports go in that direction. When these crazy guys had to go in and again, I'm saying try to finish the fight because you're always trying to finish the fight. I know that sounds weird. Like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
These guys are just –
talk to any coach in the world. They'll tell you that.
Moving around or they're just holding the guy. They're trying to finish the fight, but to get to the finished result of X, we're at Y, and the process of trying to finish the fight has begun, and we're doing that. But if we didn't understand defense and we didn't understand necessarily self-preservation – the best way to finish the fight is bite down, go into the chaos.
Chris Lieben style.
Exactly. And go until one of us falls because we don't know any better.
Yeah.
We don't know any better. So that's why those fights look that way. And that's why there's still guys like that. And there still is beautiful moments that even the most evolved martial artists find those moments to do that where it feels right. They're at a point where their belief is right and it's worth the risk.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the big show going down in Curitiba, Brazil, UFC 198, happening this weekend. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean in Black with you. UFC 198 going down in front of 45,000 fans in Curitiba, Brazil, the birthplace of the famed Shootabox Academy that has spawned the likes of Vanderlei Silva, Anderson Silva, Ninja, Shogun, Pele. The list kind of goes on and on. And it is going to be an insane night for the fans, for the fighters. The main event, the most prestigious title in mixed martial arts, the heavyweight championship of the world, the submission master, Fabricio Werdum, in his own backyard.
Yeah, awesome.
And again, many people believe that this he is the best heavyweight of all time. Beat Minotauro, the other great Brazilian heavyweight, submitted Fedor, knocked out Mark Hunt. Just you look at his accolades, the things that he's been able to do, he keeps improving, but he has a stern test. Again, if you haven't seen it, go to fightnetwork.com or Fight Pass.
For the breakdown.
UFC.com.
UFC.com. UFC's YouTube channel. It's also on Fight Pass. And it's up on my Twitter, too. You can see it. It was fun to build. It was a long one because first we were building Kane versus Werdum.
Yeah, right.
And so the idea was it was a rematch so you could look back at what happened the first time. And if we remove sea level Kane and elevation Kane as a theory, and although it matters, a lot of the time we are all looking for a big explanation. Fights are these beautiful things because they defy simple explanations.
Right.
And we look deeply for them. We try to classify things. This is a very Western way of thinking. People will say to me, is Joanna Jędrzejczyk the best striker in MMA? That's such a complex thing. Like, it's such a complex. There is no best striker in MMA. I can tell you these 20 are, like, on a level of evolution and development past these
ones. Isn't there also, like, if you go and – because mixed martial arts is so complex – that you have wrestling, you have submission wrestling, you have jiu-jitsu, you have judo, you have so many different elements. If you were to go to some of the best stand-up coaches in the world, kickboxing, yeah. Muay Thai coaches that are MMA
yeah.
specific,
yeah.
and you were to say independently, I want you to give me a list of the top three best yeah. strikers in mixed yeah. martial
we'll
arts.
Ask Dwayne, we'll ask yeah. Henry Hooft,
yeah.
and we'll ask Duke.
Sure, yeah. exactly. Yeah. Is Joanna going to be on that list? I'm not convinced that she is.
Well, Dwayne has seen her in the room, and he yeah. didn't think that she was.
Right.
But Duke would, because Duke's such a purist, he might.
But not asking her. Yeah. Not we're not at yeah. saying, hey, we're going to ask
yeah,
about
right.
Joanna.
About her. You're because, saying, yes, they'd all go, she's very, very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, so if you were to say, who are the three best,
I
that's it.
I don't think any of them.
I don't think she would be on that
no,
list.
I don't.
She's very good.
Very good.
She's very fun good. To watch. You know, she's turned me into a fan mm-hmm. because – you know, I looked at the reality show and, you know, awarding yeah. somebody a championship just for that, opposed to, you know, let's bring in the mm-hmm. best fighters at that 125 pounds, 125,
yeah.
115 pounds. They're bringing in 125. Yeah. Valeturno's going to be fighting.
Well, at least one. They're going to try it.
We're
gonna
give,
do one fight,
give it a whirl.
We're going to do a 140 while we're at
yeah.
it. So, yeah.
Speaking of 140, yeah. we're going to get back to yeah. it because one of the best female yeah. strikers has to be Cyborg, yeah. who's going to be on this
she
card.
She wouldn't be on their list
She wouldn't
either.
Be on that
I don't
list
think
either.
She'd be on their
yeah,
list.
I agree.
But there's a lot to it. So what I was saying is with Velasquez, we're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what happened? Well, it was at elevation, so he was no good. Oh, okay. Well, if that's it, if that's all we take from mm-hmm. it, and you got to put yourself in his place. You weren't in good enough shape. Okay, I'll get myself in good shape. What if that's not it?
Hmm.
What if it isn't it? There's a good chance it's not it. Well, he's
is
never looked that
chance?
Bad. He's never,
that's
he's never
that
looked
is...
like that before.
Yeah.
A lot of reasons you can look like
sure.
that. Stress, pressure, execution. There's a million reasons. It's certainly a good thing to get yourself in better shape.
Right.
But we shouldn't categorize that being the only thing, because when you broke it down, there was some real strategic errors, whether he was running out of steam or not. Like just letting up, and hot lava was the thing I say. It's hot
yeah.
lava. You got to get off the mat. Do you? Do you?
You do.
Do you? I mean,
Damian Maia, Gunnar Nelson. If you're Gunnar Nelson, it's like, do I really have to get off the mat with Damian Maia? Sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, turned out he did.
You know, is it not? Can it not be that black and white?
It is never that simple.
Sure, sure.
Because, okay, Cain Velasquez, one of the reasons he got submitted is because he refused to go to the ground.
Right.
By refusing to go to the ground, you knew that I was refusing to go to the ground. Therefore, you didn't have to worry about my stupid wrestling, and you could just strike with me, which also will also fatigue me. So it's not, oh, I wasn't acclimatized to the elevation. Well, I've never been outstruck before. I've never had my wrestling taken out of the game before. I've never been pushed back before, which happened because I wouldn't go to the ground with you. All of that stuff, letting you off the hot lava all those times, gave you advantages that you used to beat me up so bad, I had to shoot a bad takedown.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but what,
now, if, when he's on the ground, the answer that I think, whether Stipe's team will be right or not, I think the answer will be, hurt you in those moments on the ground. Now, that doesn't mean settle into your guard. It means play some open guard. It means hit you where I can. It means when you go to get up, throw some kicks at you. Stress you. Don't just, because Cain literally.
Yeah.
He literally backed out and let him up. If you do that, I know that your wrestling is not in play. You don't want this on the ground at all. Just that.
But doesn't he know that anyways? Doesn't Fabrizio Verdum know that the entire division will not go to the ground with me? They understand that I will submit them. Yeah. I have a knowledge that nobody else in this division has, like Damian Maia in the ground. It's like, oh, Gunnar Nelson will be fine in the jiu-jitsu department. Oh, shit, he's not fine.
So with your certainty, then we can
I'm not
surprise
certain.
You. No, but if you're Verdum.
Yeah, Verdum, yes, yeah,
you're Verdum,
yeah.
You're certain.
Yes.
Oh, perfect time to surprise you. I mean, BJ fought, what's his name, the wrestler from World Series of Fighting.
BJ Penn?
BJ Penn fought, yeah, in one of his last fights at 170 pounds. Fitch.
Oh, John Fitch, yeah, yeah.
Boom, shot to double.
Right.
He didn't want to wrestle. Fitch is like, I don't know what BJ is going to do, but one thing I know he's not going to do, he's not going to just come out and wrestle with me. He's not going to come out and wrestle with me. BJ Penn, boom, shoots the devil on Fitch. Like, there's any time you're sure
right.
that I'm not going to do it, it's a good time to do it. Unless it's not.
Unless it's not.
So many variables. Yeah, yeah. That's why everyone, if somebody says, well, you got to stay off the ground with him. Okay. Yeah, we should stay off the ground with him. Oh, shit, now he knows I'm staying off the ground with him. Now I literally am just a striker, and he's a mixed martial artist. So it's never that simple. It used to kind of be that simple, but now it's not that simple because I'm. It's hard enough for me to hit Fabrizio Verdum or anybody of a high level. It's hard enough for me to hit them when I can use my level change fake. It's hard enough for me to hit them when I can fake a takedown and hit them. It's hard enough for me to hit them if I push them to the fence, come off and exit, and all these different extra threats. It's still hard to hit them. Now take all those away and just box Fabrizio Verdum. Yeah. I got this hand, and I got this hand, and I got kicks. Oh, no, he's going to catch my kicks. Okay, I got this hand, and I got this hand. Now I don't have shit.
Yeah.
And now Fabrizio Verdum has everything. And so because of that, so it's a dicey game. But if you remove something into – but on the other hand, you said the perfect example. Gunnar Nelson, people
– we got to take a break. Yeah. We got to take a break. We're going to come back. Talk about UFC 198 because there's so many reasons to tune into this fight card. The Brazilians have always thrilled fight fans, and UFC 198 will be no exception. When we come back, more Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram Dean and Black with you. Before the break, we were talking about Fabrizio Verdum and Stipe Miocic will battle it out for the UFC Heavyweight Championship of the World this Saturday in Curitiba, Brazil, UFC 198. And we said that everybody knows how good Fabrizio Verdum's ground game is. Nobody is going to go to the ground with him because of the fact he has just so much more knowledge there. He's a decorated champion. And the example is, you know, when you get ego involved, like Gunnar Nelson's like, I'm not going to fear Damian Maia's jiu-jitsu. I'll engage him in the jiu-jitsu. Oh, my God. Yeah. I thought I was competent on the ground. He's just more versed than I am.
Well, this one, too, the things he said publicly and then the things I know about their mindset and the way they train and stuff don't quite line up. So he may have said, you know, I know people will be interested in this on the ground, so I'll be happy to oblige them. And I believe he even said, like, I want to test myself on the ground with him. Those things are not his natural thinking. Those things were his adaptive thinking to understanding exactly what we're saying. Because logically, the best way to beat Damian Maia is on the feet. But then you start thinking about it, and you go, well, today you can't just say, I'll avoid one thing.
Because you're eliminating.
I'm eliminating all those other threats, things I use. And if I think too much about staying off the ground, I'm going to end up on the ground. If I think too much about staying off the ground, I'm going to overreact to takedowns. And Damian Maia tricks you with takedowns.
Yeah,
so you overreact and you're down. So I'm going to end up down there if I'm trying so hard to stay not down there. So my way to adapt my thinking is, oh, I'll go there with him.
I'll be fine.
I'll be fine. I can handle him on the ground. That is a way to make your striking better. Gunnar's public discussion about being willing to fight Damian or even excited to fight Damian Maia on the ground was entirely for his own self to make him a better striker in the situation, to make Damian Maia believe it that his take all of that and himself. Didn't work. Damian Maia beat him. He went to the ground and got beat. The way he dealt with that was by saying, part of my failure is a failure of myself. And that's a key thing. People will often jump, Conor McGregor's the main recent one, although I think with Ronda too, anyone who's, people hate stronger, they'll have this reaction to stronger, but somebody will go, I will take the responsibility for my failings that caused this fight. And they'll go, you're making excuses. It's literally the opposite of making excuses.
Yeah.
It's searching for your role in it. If you go try to get a job and you do not get the job, you can go, that boss was a jerk. You can say that was unfair. You can say there were too many people. I didn't have – you can make a lot of excuses, none of which will help you get the next job. Or you can go, I need to do better interviews. I need to have a better resume. I need to be more prepared. I need to become a better thing. If you do all those things, you've improved your likelihood of getting that next job. If you ask out 10 girls and they all say no, you can go, stupid, what a bitch. You know, you can say, obviously she likes girls. You can like have all of these reactions, none of which will make you more successful at finding a girl who will find you interesting or attractive. Now, if you go back and go, I need to be a smarter guy. I need to be a more likable guy.
I got to have better breath.
Maybe I could get a better haircut. This one's stupid. I don't know why I'm wearing this shirt. She doesn't seem to like it. The Costanza isn't working for me. If you go and do those things, you have, by searching for your role in it, improved your likelihood of improvement. And that's what...
There's still no guarantees.
As it keeps happening, though, if your reaction to it is to keep improving, one day you're going to get a date or you're going to get a job or you're going to win the next fight.
Right.
And so that's what Gunnar Nelson's was. Where were my failings? Was it game? Was it strategy? And in his, he felt it was in expression, in his ability to be performing, in his ability to be performing optimally. And if you say, I performed poorly, I couldn't do what I do on the level I normally do it, some would go, well, that's because Damian Maia is too good. Yes, no, I know he's great. But if I did my thing better, maybe I would have a better chance.
Because some fighters, even I was just with Glory middleweight champion Simon Marcus, and he said it was always about your own personal performance. Mm-hmm. He goes, there's 100% times where I come out and I knock out my opponent in 2 minutes. Yeah. And it's like, I just wasn't happy with the way things were working.
God, he's smart then.
And
he's very smart.
And even some fighters, it's like, oh, I felt really good in that split decision loss. I was able to do this. I was able to do that. So it just comes down to self-realization.
Mm-hmm. And that'll go for whatever it is we're doing in anything. The new thinking that they say, if you say you're a parent or a teacher or whatever, is that you praise the performance. Mm-hmm. You praise the work. You don't praise the result. Because otherwise, if you beat 25 tomato cans and you choke them all out in a couple of minutes, and it's just like, you're the greatest, you win every fight. We didn't learn how to get you ready better. We didn't prepare you. You didn't get any mental improvements. You didn't get any physical improvements. We're supposed to praise the hard work and the process. Praise the process. That's what they say. So you go in, you can knock out a guy in a minute. I lost my very first fight, and it's one of the fights I'm most proud of. I made a lot of errors, but I knew what I knew at the time. Mm-hmm. And I went in, and I took a beating and was able to keep pushing, turn the corner. And when I look at those 7 or 8 minutes, there are minutes in there that are the best minutes I ever had. And I lost. And then there's another one where I won. I won that little belt out. I got choked the guy out. And I was nervous and I was stressed and I was going after him out of fear and trauma and like panic. And if I didn't get him out of there, 2 minutes later, I'd have lost the fight. Mm. And if you can look at that, what does that mean? What is that? Why was I panic mode, crazy mode, get this done before he gets me mode on this night? And then the other night, I can go 25 minutes.
I love that you brought that up because we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jacare and Vitor Belfort. Is Vitor Belfort one of those guys that just goes after you because of panic, because he doesn't have the gas tank? Lots of questions to be answered. We'll try our best to answer them or discuss them when Five Rounds Today continues. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdine and Robin Black with you discussing UFC 198, which goes down in Curitiba, Brazil this weekend. Verdum, Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight championship. The co-featured bout, one of the best, we talked about Damian Maia. Many people would argue that Jacare, the best jiu-jitsu guy in mixed martial arts. We know he's fallen in love with his hands, but we expect the grappling to come back, right? We're going to see him put Vitor Belfort up against the cage, try to sap the energy. Then eventually, when Vitor gets tired, pull the legs out and go to work on the ground. I know we talk about how simple things are. We know it's not going to be simple. It's Vitor. We know what he's capable of. He gave Chris Weidman hell in that first round. He can turn off everybody's lights. As a matter of fact, spinning heel kicked the current middleweight champion of the world.
Which was like the only loss he'd had in like 60 years or whatever. Yeah. How old is he? 70.
Vitor?
No. Oh. Vitor's like 35 yeah, or something. He's still very young. No, Rockhold. Yeah. So I love this fight. I'm really excited. I haven't been as excited about a Vitor fight for a while. I don't know. Maybe I'm just mellowing too. Like I was like, oh, I don't like Vitor. I don't know why I didn't like Vitor. It's not the drug thing because Josh Barnett.
I know. And we love Josh Barnett.
It's not a Brazilian thing because – I mean, I'm not a racist, for one.
And you like Minotauro.
And I love Minotauro. I love Jacare.
And you love Damian Maia.
I love Damian Maia. Yeah.
Too many. Thomas Almeida, who we're going to see coming up.
So it's not that. And I love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I thank you for making Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's a great thing. We like that thing. So it's not that. And I don't know what it is. I'm not, but yeah, for some reason, Vitor was one of these guys who was like, you know, I was cheering against him. Anderson was sometimes too.
Oh, speaking of which, if you don't know by now, Anderson Silva had to have gallbladder surgery. He's out of his fight with Uriah Hall. Apparently, they were going to try to find Uriah Hall a replacement opponent. That's not happening. They'll probably pay him his show money. Yeah. And now he'll be ready to fight in New York, and that's where he's from. So,
well, Anderson now, with his last fight was coming up, I was really excited, and I was thinking about him as a human being who's accomplished so much stuff.
That he deserves
and that it's like, stadium in his hometown on his last night. I wanted that guy to – and I never cheered for Anderson Silva. I would always make jokes because he was undeniably the greatest of all time at the time. And I'd be like, Stephen Bonner by decision. and it was fun. It was funny. It's how I amused myself. When you think about it after, it's like the greatest of all time after those moments – and to have that, I was really excited for that guy. And it's sad that he won't have that now. But Vitor versus Jacare, yes. Jacare, big parts of this fight, footwork, where he is in conjunction to Vitor, and the cage, because he's really good on the fence. He's been really good on the fence for a long time. What's not, we just can't get overhand right happy, even though he is. Maybe you can catch him, but he knows, Vitor knows that's your weapon. And it's a great weapon against the southpaw, but you just can't be like, he's looking for it. He's looking to counter you. And you were talking about performance. Chris Weidman and Ronda Rousey had two terrible performances in fights that they won right before they were done, right before they got beat.
Hmm.
Ronda went in and had a terrible performance against Betch Kohea. Was that the fight before?
Yeah, she got hit. And
terrible performance. Terrible. Everything about it was
people
terrible.
People like, that guy's an idiot. She knocked her out in like no time.
Ronda Rousey got drilled
out of
in
character.
The face, and the whole thinking was, I'm Ronda Rousey, I have better stuff than her, I'm just going to go in and trade. So that old school thinking we were saying, recklessly look to finish, Ronda did that and was successful. So in the old days with the old thinking, that would be a good performance because we didn't know the difference. Ronda wasn't – there's no logical reason you should be getting in a gunfight with this girl whose only way to beat you is by landing a big punch on you in the first 2 minutes. That's wrong in every level. The fact that it worked doesn't make it any less wrong of a strategy. Terrible performance. But she won. That led her to going, well, I can just overcome any of these chicks. No big deal. I'm Ronda Rousey. I'll win. And then she was looking over and she's like, oh, my God, this is a boxing champion. Look at the shape she's in. I'm not ready. And she melts down at the weigh-ins. Chris Weidman had a terrible performance against Vitor. Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. Now, the fact that he adapted halfway through that terrible performance, got the takedown and beat him up. But going in and fighting Vitor like this
is
a terrible
idea. Because we've seen what Vitor can
do. Yeah. So if he looked at that one honestly, he'd say, I got a win, but I had a terrible performance. So and it's like, no, but you finished him. You destroyed him. Yes, but the performance in the days and weeks before, in the walkout, in the minutes up, in my mindset, in the way I started, terrible. If you went back and said, I need to improve all of these things, you might have beat Rockhold. Instead, you went, that's right, I'm Chris Weidman. I can overcome any of these guys. I'll beat the gunfighter. I'll beat the greatest of all time, Anderson Silva. I'll outmove the mover in Lyoto Machida. I can beat any of these guys. And that led to both of those people's downfall. So they won with bad performances and then didn't make adjustments after that.
But what's good about it is this is the whole thing about mixed martial arts. You learn. You learn, and the strong get better. And I do have a feeling that we are going to see a very different Chris Weidman in this rematch with Luke Rockhold that goes down at UFC 199. We're not going to talk about that right now. We got to continue to talk about UFC 198, Vitor, and Jacare. So when you think about the Vitor that we have right now, the Vitor that's been around this game for so long, since he was 18 or 19 when he burst into the UFC, and this Jacare, an evolving Jacare who has specific gifts, just like Fabrizio Verdum and Damian Maia. We know that Vitor has the lightning speed and the power. Working with, I think Nicky Holtzkin was down at the Black Zillions, Glory Fighter. Vitor's going to be ready. Looks like he's in tip-top shape. Is the job of Jacare, let's play conservative. Let's get this fight into rounds two and three and try to wear out Vitor.
It's my feeling, and I haven't looked this closely, that all Vitor's knockouts in the last number of years are in the first round, or they're very close to it. So, you know, and if that's true, well, none of those people made it to the second round.
Yeah.
So none of those guys who lost. And let's take a look at that. So he knocked out
Dan Henderson, knocked
twice.
Dan, both in the first round.
Yeah.
Knocked out Luke Rockhold in the first round. Knocked out Michael Bisping at 127 of round two.
Okay, so pretty close.
Yeah.
Early.
Submitted Anthony Johnson in round one.
And that's 5 years ago.
Yeah, and then Yoshihiro Akiyama. Also in round one.
In
Rich
all those,
Franklin, round one.
Is there any decision wins?
There is one decision. The last decision win he had was against James Zickic in September of 2007.
So that's 9 years ago he has not won a decision.
Yeah.
Has he lost some decisions in that time?
No decisions. There's no.
He has not been to a third round since 2009?
That's the last one.
Has he been?
He was in round four with John Jones.
Oh, that's
and John
right.
Jones
that's
beat him.
Right.
So when you see that, it's John.
All the fights that have gone past 2 minutes of round two, he has lost. Okay, that's not a bad place to start.
So is that exactly? Okay, Chase giving us the wrap. We're going to come back and continue to dissect this very intriguing middleweight matchup, which is the co-main event of UFC 198 when we come back to Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Before the break, we were talking about the co-main event of UFC 198, which goes down this weekend in Curitiba, Brazil. Vitor Belfort, Jacare. Quickly, what do you think is going to happen in this fight?
Well, I think judging by what we just looked at before the break, and these are not absolutes.
Of course
not. But it's a little guideline.
Sure.
A little possible way to look at things. You know he's coming out fast, and you know he's coming out super offensive. And when he's done that, he's laid out guys in the first round. Mike lasted till two because he's better than
– exactly.
Because people don't appreciate how good Michael Bisping is. We figure he's going to do that. If he does that, let's get the body lock. So he's coming towards us. Retreat, retreat, retreat. If we then –
because you know he's moving forward.
Yeah. And then if we then move into his forward movement, we're doing it to a body lock, or we're doing it to an underhook and inside the bicep, and we're shoving him against the cage. If we get the body lock, maybe we can take him down. If we don't, we shove him against the cage.
Make him work.
A brand new world there. Our new world becomes he can't – we're not letting him out of here. We've been working diligently on keeping him here, and we're going to make him work, and we're going to try to take him down from the cage. If he gets out of that, we're back out to the open. We got to go back right
rinse,
back
repeat.
To that. Yeah, and that's our game. If the opportunity arises to set him up with one of our tricks for our right hand, we're going to do that. If he bites hard on that, we're going to use that for a takedown. So this is all what we'd like to do. Meanwhile, you're trying to knock us unconscious the whole time. So this all sounds really good. And whenever you'll hear, what's the strategy for this guy? And some guy's sitting in a place like this. Well, if we can do this, then we need reactive takedowns during this kind of thing. Yeah, okay, great. That sounds brilliant. Except for you're trying to knock me unconscious the entire time. That's the part that always gets left out.
It does.
And there are different levels of whatever. So if you've never fought, you're missing that thing. Because and it's not, I spar. Okay, still different.
It's still different,
because as soon as you realize that the guy, as soon as that first
no punches are being pulled,
full power shot hits you, the meaning of everything changes. So if we're attempting to analyze the meaning of things, but we're missing a big part of its meaning, we can't really do that. But I've been drilled in the head really, really, really hard at the lowest level. So I'm missing the information of what it could be like to have the Vitor damage. Jeez. But I have some reference point.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, lower than my reference point would be like I've sparred a bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then lower one would be I watch a lot of fights. You know? You don't need to be a fighter to do my brand of analysis. But how could it be a bad thing? How could having more information,
of course,
real information about it?
I think you need to have been a fighter in order to your level of analysis.
I think Hardy does some brilliant analysis.
And you know what Dan Hardy was?
Yeah.
He was a fighter as well.
Yeah, and you know who punched Dan Hardy in the head?
George St. Pierre.
All of these guys. He does it different.
Carlos Condit.
Exactly. Now, Faraz has had a couple of amateur fights, but he's tasted it, and he's also a philosopher on a different level. He's feeling this in ways that, but outside of that, and it's there are people who have never fought that are. There's a lot of good analysis in the world now. It's the rising tide has raised all ships. There's a lot more of it, but it's really, really does a disservice when you have this strategy that exists in a vacuum where you're not getting kicked in the head by Vitor Belfort. You know what I mean? And because all of this is a great plan, and then Vitor drills you with something, or Vitor fakes you out with something, or the first jab suddenly changes your central processing unit to go, okay, wait a second. I can't rush him to the cage because the last two times I did that, my eyes were full of blood, and I thought it was 1912.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't know what was going on. And so that changes everything. But at its default, we stay away from Vitor's power. If and when it's possible, we move through the space of danger by hopefully drawing something out and being able to read the matrix of what's happening, get to the body lock, or get into the fence, and then work from there. If we can't do that, when we're out here in death zone where Vitor can kill us, we make sure to reintroduce the right hand, and then we try to do that again. But bearing in mind, we're getting our heads kicked and punched at all times.
Outrageous. Of course, the heavyweight main event going down at UFC 198. That was the middleweight co-main event, Jacare Vitor Belfort. Anderson Silva is out. Uriah Hall right now doesn't look like he's going to be fighting on the card. It's the debut UFC debut of Chris Cyborg, Shogun Corey Anderson. You know, Shogun, are we going to see a Shogun that is more reminiscent of the Shogun of old? I hope so too. But are you confident of that?
I don't know. I mean, it's
Corey Anderson, Mark Henry's his boxing coach.
I know. And I don't know. You hope so. Isn't it? But how much has he changed? You hear a lot of this crop of Brazilian greats influenced everything in fighting. You know, it's weird. Anderson was saying that there's not a lot of the next stars. I think Almeida would disagree with that. He said Warley Alves, who is on this card, is one of those potential guys. But with this crop is slowly all aging. So we do need to see the next generation of great Brazilian stars.
We're going to take another break. When we come back, that will be it for us here on Five Rounds Today. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Final segment. We were going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, but it was so interesting talking about UFC 198. So many great fights on this card. Before the break, we were talking about Shogun and about how we're looking ahead to the stars of the future, because Shogun and Ninja and Pele and Anderson Silva all got us excited about the landscape that we're kind of seeing those guys eventually retire from. The Vanderlei Silva as well. We talked about UFC 198, UFC 199, Rockhold Weidman going down on June 4th. But in between 198 and 99, we have that fight night card with Cody Garbrandt, kind of the future of Team Alpha Male, taking on Thomas Almeida, the future of Team Shootabox. And I love Almeida. I love both of these guys.
Me too.
You look at that card, you know you have the future of 135 pounds. You think, okay, well, the rest of the card can't be that good if these two young guys are on the card. Henan Barral, former champion Jeremy Stephens, Tarek Saffiedine versus Rick Story,
awesome.
Masvidal, Lorenz Larkin. You have Berkman, Paul Felder, Aljamain Sterling, Brian Caraway, Sarah McMahon, Jessica Ai, Eric Koch, Shane Campbell, live on Fight Network. Holy smokes.
Super awesome. The main event is the big one. And it's this kid 20-0.
Yeah, 20-0. Thomas Almeida, 20-0. Again, he can take it. I became a believer in that Brad Pickett fight where he had to deal with some adversity. This kid's 24 years of age,
know,
and man,
crazy.
Oh, man, oh, man.
He and he's knocked out, what, 15 guys?
Yeah, it's like 16 knockout wins.
That's pretty legit.
Yeah, it is legit.
Now, why is he generating so much power?
We only have about a minute.
He's planting his feet. He's got his feet planted. Move forward. Bam, bam, bam. Move sideways. Bam. And so
Garbrandt
wants to be moving around him, never be straight in front of him, come out to here as he turns back, drill him, get under him, get outside, make sure he introduces some wrestling really early. This kid's forward, backward, you got to be an asterisk with a circle around it. That's very hard to do because this kid has enough power to hit you once and change the fight. Cool fight, though.
135 pounds, we're really seeing the future of the division on that fight night card. Both of those guys, I'm sure, will challenge for a title. Next week, some of the fallout from UFC 198, and then we're looking to the future. Got to thank my pal Robin Black, our producer Chase Kaiser, and especially you for tuning in. I'm John Ramdean. We'll see you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.